All right, well, today's proposed agenda, oops. See if I can do this with some efficiency. I'll just drop it into the IRC, plus a third item from Manu, which is start processing issues from the spec.
Let me, hold on one second, I'm scribing.
And scribe today, who's up? Brian? Are you on?
Dave Longley's going to scribe.
All right, Longley. So, first item on the agenda today is the W3C Advisory Board feedback. There's a link in the agenda that we just dropped in to this discussion. Manu, you added this to the, or suggested we add this to the agenda in the last day or two as we were putting the agenda together. You want to give us a quick intro to this topic?
Sure. So the discussion, the AB feedback, let me get the link, W3C AB feedback. So just a precursor to this is W3C member confidential, so we can't actually talk about the contents or specific things that people said on the call today. It's W3C member confidential. We can talk in generalities. And what helps is that Mike Champion has sent something to the public that we can talk about. So just a quick note that the W3C Advisory Board, so these are people that are elected from the W3C membership. W3C membership elects Advisory Board members. There are 10 people on the board. Three of them are Tantek Celik from Mozilla, Chris Wilson from Google, and Mike Champion from Microsoft, same people that have raised concerns about the verifiable claims charter. It was a general discussion on what to do next. Chris, Mike, and Tantek raised the concerns that they've raised publicly, but there's more detail and information in there in the AB minutes. So if you're a W3C member, you can jump in and take a look at those. That will probably motivate some of the things that we focus on in response to them. At the same time, or around the same time, Mike Champion sent this email in, email from Mike Champion of Microsoft.
Thank you.
So Mike Champion from Microsoft sent an email in that basically said, it was good. So the first thing that Mike Champion said is that he's convinced that the education industry use cases meet the requirements for effectively starting a working group. So he's basically saying, he said he's personally persuaded. That doesn't mean that's Microsoft's position. It means it's his position as someone that's been at the W3C for a long time and an advisory board member. So that's good that we have met the RecTrack readiness criteria. So let me just copy that in. RecTrack readiness criteria. So he says we've met the RecTrack readiness criteria for the education scenario for verifiable claims. So that's good news. That doesn't mean Microsoft might still create a formal objection because somebody else inside Microsoft doesn't want it to proceed. But that's good. So then Mike Champion asks, he's convinced from an education perspective. I think the stuff that specifically Nate, Otto, Matt Stone, and Richard Varn said persuaded him. He then said, you guys want to do stuff in payments. Where are the people in payments that are making those arguments? So We need to hear from folks in the retail space. We've raised this as a web payments interest group item next Monday, but we need to hear basically from Bob Burke, Jay from Cupels. Probably we heard from Gray Taylor at Kinexys, but that, you know, Mike Champion didn't find that compelling. So basically Mike Champion saying, where are the implementers? Where are the people that are saying they're going to implement not some general verifiable claims thing, but specifically the specification that is being put forward? Who's going to work on it, and do they have the ability to deploy this into the market? So that's kind of where Mike Champion's coming from. So that's the, you know, from the retail payments and retail space, those are the types of responses that at least Mike needs to hear to convince him. I think that's kind of where we are right now. So Matt, over to you.
A follow-up question to that, Manu. I know we were kind of spawned out of the web payments interest group, our working group, as a need to solve issues in the payments space. And it turns out that another industry vertical, education, maybe is more mature in the need. So my question is, so what? You know, maybe we validated that we need a standard for industries that are not payments. What happens if we leave them behind and we don't get a, you know, we don't satisfy his need for a use case in that space?
So this is, you know, this places the Web Payments Interest Group in a fantastically awkward position, because they're the group that voted kind of unanimously to put the charter up at W3C in the first place. I would expect that we will hear back from a number of Web Payments IT folks. And if we don't, then, you know, payments for verifiable claims gets ripped out as a part of the charter. But it's going to be very strange that the Web Payments Interest Group proposed the charter in the first place, and then it ends up having nothing to do with payments, at least as far as the charter is concerned. So I think it's mostly that group didn't expect to be taken out of the charter.
Ben, is that something that you, in your relationship with the web payments members or participants, would drive? Do you have the right relationships to make that happen?
And Shane, I don't know if you want to say anything. I'm trying to see who's on the call today that's also in the web payments group. Shane, do you have anything to add to that?
I put it in IRC already. We know there's payments people who care. They'll speak up. I'm not worried about it. I'm shocked the advisory board discussed this issue at all. The advisory board doesn't normally discuss pending charters. I don't even know why it came up.
So I know why.
Okay, good. Well, that's not for this group's, but yeah. Interesting. Anyway, that's all I had to say. Sorry.
All right. So do we have action items out of that other than to get the payments community to speak up?
No, I think that's the action item. We've requested space on next week's Web Payments IG call to discuss this. Here's the challenge. Here's what I think is going to be difficult. I think Mike Champion, at least the discussion seems to be revolving around, yes, but who has actually implemented this out in the field as RecTrack readiness criteria. So what you know, Mike and Chris and Tontek to a point seem to be saying is, we need to see people that have implemented the spec as it stands right now in the wild. And this is kind of a new thing at W3C, and it is not an opinion that's shared with all W3C members. you know, Phil, I know, I think you joined the call. I don't know if you want to weigh in on this, but the general tenor, at least with Tontech, Chris and Mike, seems to be, you know, standards should be discovered, not created from whole cloth. And even though we have organizations saying we've been implementing this stuff for a decade plus, their response is, yes, but you haven't implemented this specific thing. Who has implemented this specific thing, and why does this specific thing solve a problem that you've been unable to solve before?
Hi. I'm interested to know why manner you think the AB discussed it. I agree completely that it's not our damn business, frankly. And I don't know why. Maybe you do. Maybe you don't want to say in open forum like this, but it strikes me as very odd. I think the people here, I think you have all put in so much effort to this. I don't understand why this is even a thing. I think it's ludicrous, and the sooner we get this thing on the road, the better. And I am perplexed. Let's see if we can just, you know, stop arguing about this and get on with it. This thing about incubation and so on, well, I think you've proved it endlessly. Now, having said that, I am somebody who did many years, was responsible for trying hard to, create a market by doing the standard first, and I understand why that's a bad idea, and I've got the scars on my back to go along with that. But I don't think there's any, you know, I mean, this group is being asked to do things that no one else that I know of has ever been asked to do, so I don't think it's, I frankly am amazed that any of you are still bothering to turn up and haven't told us where to go by now.
Thanks, Phil. I'm Q plus. Hey, Matt. Is it okay if I go?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
So Phil, you asked the question. Thank you, Phil. It's great to hear from W3C staff that you feel like the bar here is fantastically high. I think the reason the AB discussed this is because it is something that I believe that Chris, Tontech, and Mike, as reps for Mozilla, Google, and Microsoft, want to see changed at W3C. So they are concerned that W3C staff are spread too thin. They want to see very thorough incubation before new working groups are started, and we just happen to come. The verifiable claims work just happened to be coming to a head, just as they feel like their momentum on changing the way W3C works in this regard is coming to a head. So we're the first guinea pig test case, right? Mm-hmm. And they're pushing back hard because they have these things that they have new criteria that they want to see become a part of the W3C process. So they are exercising that philosophy on us through their positions on the AB and as very large W3C members. That's it's not because we're breaking and I, you know, Shane, you said, you know, we're first one to break ground. I don't think we are the first ones to break new ground. I think this is a new thing that they want to see happen, and they're using us to push that discussion. That's why I think it's happening. But let me add one other thing. But with that happening, I think we have actually done the things they want us to do. They're just not convinced that we have. So, for example, Chris Wilson multiple times has said there are no implementations. But there are implementations. Digital Bazaar has an implementation. Accredit Trust has an implementation. Pearson and ETS You have implementations. They're deployed out there. People are using them. So you know, if you look at the most recent thing that Chris Wilson said, he still says there are no implementations. So there's clearly a miscommunication that's happening there. Same thing with Tontech. He doesn't believe that there are implementations. He believes people are just making it up. They want to see a system that they can use that uses this spec.
Right. So that's what I was asking you today, and I forget whether this was on a list or just between a few of us, and there's nothing unpublic about this. I was looking at the use case document. I know we've discussed this the other day. The use case document is fairly is deliberately generic, and I was asking whether we had one of the things. I think it was Mike Champion was saying that, who by the way seems to be softening, which is nice. We're saying things like, "Ah, yes, but is there an ecosystem? Are there multiple people saying they want this?" And you said yes, because you know we have the example among others. I know of there's an ETS and so on. And you said that you took the specifics out because you wanted to make a nice generic use case document. Okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. So in other words, I really think everyone on this call and in this group has put enough effort into this. I just want to. I haven't had time to do it. I'm sorry. I wanted to just have one more look at the charter and do a few bits and bobs of it. But I wanted to go to W3M as a management. I'm hoping it'll go to them a week tomorrow and spend time before then. I hope I won't have to put it back a week, but I'm hoping it'll go to them. They need to review it internally. I don't think there's any problem. We've discussed it enough. So I'm hoping it'll go to the AC in the coming weeks. And I would. Unless I find anything else, I would be inclined to move on in your conversation and think more about what you actually want to get on and do, rather than spending time continually answering the same question from the same people all the time.
I think that is actually a nice segue, Phil, into the second agenda item, which is the response to the AC about the issues that they're bringing up. They're kind of along these lines. Last week, specifically, the use cases being seeming to have a pendulum swing, or we're stuck in a yo-yo pattern where on one hand they're too specific and then on the other hand they're too generic. And one document, you know, we have a document that sort of represents both flavors. And when we show one, they want to see the other one, essentially, it seems. So last week on our call, I don't think you were here last week, if I remember right, we started a very brief kind of pragmatic document that was meant to be a couple of specific examples from healthcare, education, commerce, and KYC that said, here are the current use cases that are in practice today that are representative of the marketplace that are out in the wild, where a standard would either facilitate interoperability or security or privacy or one of the other goals that we have. So should we kind of shift gears and talk about what we need to do? Is that the last nail in this coffin that we can place so that we can move on to start dealing with issues in the spec? And just for reference, Here's the document that we started. I just put a link to the in the IRC. Manu, you're up.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that Phil sent us the email about, you know, can we get some documented use cases with like real world data in there? I think that was a good suggestion, and I think a number of us are trying to just get those data that data here. So you know, I know our organization has a bunch of verifiable claims that we're talking with various companies about, and we're you know engaged in pilots. I know you know Evernim does, ETS does, Pearson does. There are a number of us that that have this stuff so we can document it and put it out there and kind of demonstrate how close or far apart some of this stuff is. Open badges is another, you know, example. So, you know, and I think some of you have also taken screenshots of websites to kind of show where the friction points are. So I once we document this stuff, I'm guessing we're going to link to it from the use cases. Phil, is that what you would find useful, is like links from the use cases to here's real world data talking about, you know, this specific use case?
My email is frozen again. Whoever told me I should move to IMAP rather than POP needs to be shot. I think, you know, you already got, as far as I'm concerned, a well-written use case document. So, yes, I think given the work you've done here, I'd be inclined to, as a suggestion anyway, underneath each of those generic use cases you've got, you could say, you know, real-world situations where this applies. And have at least one for each of those, ideally more if you have them, and I suspect you already have, so that you would present the generic use case, which is the problem you're trying to solve, and you would also present, here are some real-world cases where real-world companies, assuming they're happy to be named in this situation, and they generally are, have this problem, and so if we meet this use case, then we've met these real-world problems. And so I would augment the document you've got with real-world use cases rather than trying to do anything new.
Great, thanks.
All right, so, oh, Manu, you're up.
Sorry, it's an old entry.
Ah. So we have a little bit of, if that's the, it seems like where we are then is we have a group of us trying to collect these real world examples. Right now they're kind of running in a parallel document. So our goal or objective would be to bring those back in to our official use case document as a reference, you know, to refer to them or to embed them in that final doc that becomes part of the charter. Is that, did I hear you right, Phil?
It's not part of the charter. No. I mean, this is the use case document that you'll publish. I imagine very early on in the life of the working group. I think the charter. I need to read it again just one more time to check when I'm not trying to do three other things at the same time. But I'm pretty sure the charter is as it's going to be. This is simply to acknowledge the discussion that's gone on, and it can go out in the call for review to the AC. That's all. This is extra information, but I'm not suggesting that. But you know, you don't put use cases in a charter, and I don't care
Counselor.
Which company you are. You don't ask for
yeah.
it.
Sure.
So just a real quick try to. Propose a slightly different strategy. So we still end up gathering this specific data and putting it in the document, but maybe we need a section of the use cases that basically talks about real-world data. So, you know, the use cases as they are, I think many of the people in this group, and we're talking, you know, 30, 40, 50 people have reviewed the use cases at this point. People are fairly happy with the use cases document, but we don't back it up with real-world data. And if we just collect a bunch of real-world data now, we're only going to be able to apply them to a very small handful of the use cases that we have in the document. So maybe what we need instead is a section in the use cases document that just talks about real-world data. And we link to the real world data and we say, you know, here are some examples of verifiable claims in the wild today. And we put an example of, like, you know, open badges, we put an example of the Pearson the Claim stuff, we put some ETS examples in there. John Tibbetts transcript from IMS Global is a good, you know, example. We've got examples from Department of Homeland Security. We just put that in there as, here are a bunch of claims. And this is what it looks like, and that will at least ground it in, these are deployed, right? This is stuff that we're actively working with customers on, pilots, deployed products, all that kind of stuff. Any thoughts on that approach?
That seems like a reasonable way to kind of organize this content. I think we run the risk. And the nice thing about the use cases we have now is they are fairly abstract. And each of us representing an industry can read it and say, okay, I understand how that applies to me. And when I go to the second use case, I don't want to have to page through 10 different real-world examples necessarily that don't apply to me. So this feels like data that goes in the appendix.
So Bob's on the queue.
Yeah, you know, we have a coupon media. We see some applications that we'd like to pilot with this, you know, but we haven't done it yet. So do you want that feedback as well as how we think it would apply to what we want to do moving forward, or?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, we see applications for it. We just haven't done it yet.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Mike Champion from Microsoft needs to hear that from you,
okay.
And even just the mock-up of, like, this is what we'd like to do would be
okay.
Helpful, because right now, it's just deafening silence. He said, what about retailers and people that deal with coupons, and he hasn't heard back anything, so his
okay.
thought on that is, well, they're not there when we know that you're here.
Okay.
Just to really quickly respond to you, Matt, I don't think we'd embed the examples directly in the document. Some of the examples are very, very large. But what we can do is link to them, and we can store them in the directory. So it would just be a link to a JSON file of some kind. So you wouldn't have to thumb through, you know, pages of content.
Got it.
And then, Phil, would that meet the requirements that you had, like links to real-world data?
I think there are two things. There are satisfying the demands we're getting from VAC and now the AB, and there's the getting a use case document ready for publication as a working group in the new year. I know Greg is with us. So one of the my example of what I think is a really good use case document, and I wasn't in contact with this group, so I'm praising other people here, is the CSV on the web working group. And the reason I like the CSV on the web use case document is because each of its use cases does have real world data. It doesn't have anything made up. So I think in the cases where you've got those generic use cases, I would be inclined to yes, maybe put them in an appendix or put them in there. That's a job for the editors of the document to do at the time. But I think at this stage now, where we're just trying to get agreement from the membership to go ahead with this, I think it is worth it'll be worth saying in the message that goes to the AC for review, you know, in response to multiple comments, here are bits of real world data that will be added that we'll use to augment existing use case document showing real-world cases in these different scenarios that we've collected in the use case document, something like that. So, you know, at this stage, it's a question of pointing to it for the AC's use. In the future document, that's up to the working group and the editors how they choose to do it.
Phil, let's see, is there anyone on the queue? No. If I sort of think about timing and sequence, and a sort of a sense of urgency, this document I just sort of scanned through, are you saying, are you recommending that we produce a deliverable along these lines on a very short timeline, like in the next week or two, before this potentially goes up for the vote? What I'm trying to get my head around sort of tactically, what is the urgent item that we do in the next 10 days that moves the needle on this?
Right. I believe in the emails I've got and the Google Doc that I've just been pointed to, I believe I'm right in saying that I have enough for what I need to do. I don't think you can be asked to do it anymore. I need to do my bit, and because of various distractions, I haven't done it, and I've got lots of deadlines and everything else. But my job now is to get. I've got two things. First of all, I want to write to. I've got to get W3M, the management, to agree that it goes to the AC, which I think they'll do, and I will use as evidence for that, I will say to them, this group has been put through the mill, it has been subjected to an unusual level of scrutiny, both in the AC forum and by the AB. It has answered every single question it's been asked, in many cases multiple times. In the case where people are asking for real world, show me the ecosystem, show me the existing development before we do anything, I can point to documents I've already got where I can say this has been done. I can point to the use case document that already exists, and I can point to previous use case documents on the wiki and this Google Doc now that has real world information that backs up the generic use cases. That is all I need. It's certainly all I need to get through W3M. And then when it goes out to AC review, which is a document, which is an email I have to draft, that will include some of that information, because I think in this case we do need to provide extra information for the AC. What I mean is that's me to document what you have already documented, me to collect together what you've already documented, and I will put that forward to the AC. I've read through the AC review, the AC forum discussions. I hear what they're saying. I can see why they're asking those questions. I'm pleased to say that Mike Champion is softening. I recognize that Chris Wilson has been given the same answer to the same question, and he keeps asking it and so on. So I think you've done everything you can possibly be asked to do. The short-term document thing, that comes in after the working group has been approved, which I'm actually very confident it will be. I have actually no doubt at all that there will be a verifiable claims working group that will start in the new year, whether it's beginning of January or maybe the end of January, I wouldn't like to say, but it will be in the new year. And then, because of all the work you've done, you hit the ground running and you've already got your use case document, and that's when that's the document I'm talking about, this group producing that. Nothing new that you haven't already done. That's cool.
That sounds very positive.
I hope so.
Yeah. One slight clarification. I do think we need to document, put those hard use case, the data in there, in the use cases document, where we say, here's the data we're working with today. This is not made up. This is actually implemented in systems. This is what we're doing today.
That's good stuff. Yeah, yeah. And I have to tell you, I have a workshop in 2 weeks' time, which I'm hoping is going to lead to a new working group. If we've got to go through this every single time for every working group, then I shall reserve judgment on that for the time being. But I tell you, I'm not going to have. The working group I want to start next year would not pass all these tests. And I can't think many would, but still. I actually have another thing I'd like to bring up if there's time later in the meeting, Matt, just to let you know.
All right. Do you want to give us a hint for what that is so we can manage time to get to it?
I wonder whether it's about age verification and the possibility of the UK government passing a law which would require age verification to be in place for anyone selling age-restricted products or services. and whether you've touched on that as a political issue as opposed to a technical one.
We have in the commerce side claims that relate to, you know, over 21. In the U.S. example, it's buying alcohol.
I saw that, yeah.
Sort of fall back on. We don't necessarily call this out in education very explicitly, or maybe I should go look at this, but in education and sort of professional licensure realm, legislative acts are kind of the defining bar that drive our systems. You know, and one of the examples that I pulled together is a verifying a nurse aide license in the state of South Carolina. That's part of the Department of Health for the state. So it's not just the, you know, UK commerce aid restriction. Many examples require a verified claim before an individual can take a job or practice their craft.
Yes. Now, the political question comes in is that at the moment, there are a number of ideas put forward for how you might do that. Most of them are complete wacko and ill-informed. For various reasons, should not be touched. My political fear is that come the day when W3C has a recommendation for how to do verifiable claims, the legislators say, aha, right, now you can, therefore it is mandated that you must. In that case, the technology that we're talking about developing here has a whole extra layer of requirement on it and stuff, and it gets horrible, and we end up getting in huge battles with the ACLU, who have another person they have to target for the next 4 years. They'll be rather busy. There's a whole load of politics that comes into it that we need to be mindful of. And I'm just, I suppose, as someone just coming into this new, asking whether this community has come across that as a political issue. Have you had any flack about it? Are you expecting any flack about it? Because you're going to get it.
Richard, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussions about that over the past couple of years. I and many people on this call are keenly aware of those issues. And one of the reasons we're attracted to what we're doing is that we're able to provide, in this, if we do this right, a tool set in which people get to make conscious choices about how their privacy is managed. So our answer back to that, to anyone who's concerned about that, is that we're providing, in the very standards work we're doing, a response that affirmatively goes after the issues that the ACLU and others who are privacy advocates care about. So we've tried to build that into our process from the beginning. That doesn't mean they can't misinterpret, misunderstand, and make outrageous claims about things, because I've had them do that to me before when I was actually trying to help them. So I appreciate your sensitivity, but I don't know what more we can do besides continuing to emphasize, you know, the ideas of non-lock-in and privacy-sensitive and privacy-protecting methods that we're proposing. Stop there and let others add anything to that if they feel differently or want to augment that.
Manu, you're next on the list.
Phil, I just dropped a link into a response from Gray Taylor. It's actually Mike Champion's email, which responds to Gray Taylor. But if you scroll down about a page, Gray Taylor is the executive director of Kinexys. Kinexys is the standardization body for all fuel in convenience store retailing in the U.S. So, the number of stores they have is in, like, the tens. I don't know if it's the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. It's a lot. If you buy fuel in the United States or buy stuff from a convenience store in the United States, you deal with the technology standards that they put out there. in that email, he clearly talks about their primary use case is around age verification, right? And it's for exactly what you said, Phil. It's for making sure that a person is above the age of, you know, 15, 18, 21, whatever age you need to be, to buy things like tobacco products or alcohol from a convenience store. And so this is a primary use case for them. So there's a desire for the solution of this, and they're looking at verifiable claims as a mechanism that can address that, and we have age verification in our use cases and have talked about it fairly deeply. Okay, so that's on the desire side. People desire verifiable claims to address that use case. What we also have, let me try and find the spec. At a recent workshop called Rebooting Web of Trust, so Privacy Considerations, a number of us got together and sat down and hashed out all of the initial privacy considerations when it comes to verifiable claims. So I know that Wendy Seltzer at W3C is very concerned about the privacy implications of verifiable claims. There are a number of EU mandates that are incredibly important to take into account when talking about privacy, because from a regulatory perspective, organizations that do not provide certain levels of privacy to their customers or whoever they interact with can be fined. I mean, there are serious fines that go along with this. So to attempt to address that, we have a very, you know, fairly good high-level privacy consideration section. So we have 15 items in privacy considerations. Most of them are just not filled out right now. They're discussions that were captured as kind of section headers in the spec, and I think we expect all of those things to be filled out over the lifetime of the working group. But you know, you kind of ask the general question, you know, are we thinking about privacy? And the short answer is yes, absolutely. And there are many nuanced things that we need to discuss as a working group when talking about how this technology is deployed out there.
Good, thank you. I'll just share one, like this is something that was thrown at me the other day. I'm not suggesting anyone look at it now particularly, but as I say, it's the digital economy bill that's going through the UK Parliament now, which, as you say, it sort of requires retailers to do age verification online. All the examples published are all always about alcohol. They don't mean alcohol, they mean porn. And that's what this is all about. And there's this requirement that they must do it. And there's people coming up with, say, these various ideas, some of which are well-intentioned but wrong. Some of them are, oh, I can make a quick buck if they use my proprietary system, and so on. So there's a whole sort of, there's a chapter that sort of lists ideas that have been put forward and then destroys them all one by one. And so, you know, it sounds as if you're perfectly well aware of this, which is great. I assumed you would be. And I suppose I'm just, you know, in my permissions and obligations working group thing, there's this legal thing that says just because I've said you have to pay me $1 for looking at this doesn't necessarily mean to say that you've received that message, and you get into all sorts of legal differences there, and Wendy starts jumping up and down and so on. So I just think that at some point, as you clearly well know, this is going to bite you, and it sounds as if you're well prepared, which is terrific. Thank you.
So one note on that, though, to this group and probably to the W3C at large, is it drives us I guess be careful about overselling a capability or deliverable that's in this charter. Our current plan is to make a data model that represents this kind of content. And what you're describing from the UK is a full end-to-end capability with protocols and process and everything else that goes along with it. And that's not what we will have when we're done with this first phase.
Right. Yeah, that's what I understood, and it struck me that the charter was careful to make that distinction, which means you're safe. Good.
Oops, sorry. So, any more on this topic, or should we move to the, we have about 10 minutes left in the call today. The last remaining item on the agenda is to work through issues on the spec, get roll up our sleeves and do some of the work that we're chartered to do, perhaps. Before we move on, I just want to make sure there's nothing left on this these items that we've covered so far. Sounds like no. Manu, you wanted to open the discussion about issue tracking. Can you get us going on that?
Yes, absolutely. Before that, we need to get two people on the phone, or one person unidentified, 214 area code. Who's that? Oh, sorry, 214. 214-384-2284. And an unknown SIP caller. No response. Okay, moving on. So the claims data model spec has lived at this address for a while now. In fact, all of the specs were on opencreds.org, which is the name that we started with and moved away from. We need to pull it. So this conversation is around generally how do we manage the spec and issues. W3C has kind of a new process that it uses where it manages all this stuff on GitHub. So the things that need to be done between now and the formation of the working group, hopefully I'll get to it. One of us will get to it today or tomorrow or sometime this week, is we need to pull this spec out into its own GitHub repository. We need to put it into its own GitHub repository, and then we need to add a number of issues. We need to document the issues in that associated with that GitHub repository. So typically, every spec gets its own repository. So we will probably pull the use cases out into their own repository, the verifiable claims data model and representations spec into its own repository, and then start logging issues on those. And then from our week-to-week calls, what we're going to do is the chairs, along with some, the editors, are probably going to take a look at the issues and prioritize them to make sure that we get through the issues in a way that meets the goals of the working group. And that's it. I mean, it's basically rinse and repeat. So we'll have specs in GitHub repositories. There will be issues logged against the specifications. Most of the discussion these days, it used to be it happened on the mailing list. Today, these days, it happens on the GitHub issue tracker, and you can set it up to send you notifications via email when conversations are going on. And there's a process that W3C we're seeing used more and more in different working groups at W3C that basically uses GitHub for issue tracking and discussion. So I guess the first question is, are there any objections to working in that way? And again, what I just proposed is the standard way of working on this stuff at W3C.
Yeah, I'm on the queue. I think it seems to me we had this discussion a while ago, and we did resolve to use multiple repositories, but I'm still a little bit hung up on how you deal, for instance, with shared assets if you want to have, say, use cases referenced from a document, or you have terms that are in common. currently, I think we have sort of have a common area and several specs and different directories in there. That's certainly the way we did it in JSON-LD. It's the way we did it in CSV on the web. Having multiple use cases does seem to challenge that. The in the CSVW use case or case, for example, there was a repository under the W3C organization for CSVW where we could collect everything. So sometimes issues span different specifications. It allowed us to organize those and to note the be able to tag issues at, across all of the different specifications that they might touch. If we go into multiple repositories, it seems to me we lose the ability to do that form of cross-linking and resource sharing.
So just to note how we address this in the Web Payments IG, and I'm sure Shane is going to say something kind of sort of aligned with this. The Web Payments IG has an IG repository where we raise general things that affect kind of all of the specs. That's just kind of a general discussion area. It's a holding spot for issues that bridge a number of different specs. We also have spec-specific issue trackers, which are just issues that have to do with a very specific spec. And that seems to be, you know, having those two kinds of issue trackers seem to be okay. People seem to be somewhat okay with that. The other thing that you raised, Greg, is kind of a technical question, like, you know, how do you, let's say you have a shared glossary, how do you refer to that glossary from a bunch of different specs? What we've been doing, at least in the Web Payments IG, is we publish everything to GitHub Pages. And if you do that, you can cross-link between all the specs. Like you can even pull in like terminology. You can have a repository for common terminology. We have terminology for the Web Payments work. And then each spec pulls that terminology in, thanks to a number of extensions that Shane did. So there is a pattern that we can follow that works, I think, fairly well in the Web Payments IG. Shane, I don't know if this is the same pattern that you use in for the ARIA work.
Pretty close, and there's some magic that we do in JavaScript to automatically resolve inter-document references, which is something that'll come up as well. But I guess my point is this is a solved problem, and I don't think we need to solve it again. I don't think it's solved well anywhere, but it's solved well enough.
So it seems that we're resolved to put the spec in its own repository according to Manu's suggestion.
Greg, was that did that address your concern or?
Oh, I'm sure it would work. There are different ways to do it. I just didn't understand some of those technical things. I'm certainly quite familiar with the mechanisms that you and Shane have discussed for resolving these things, and you know, I can see how you could do that given a common account. It's just sort of a clarification of what I was looking for. I don't have an issue with going in that direction.
So I can take an action to split the spec out. It would be nice for someone else to do it, but whoever does it has to know the history of the repo and it has a long history. So I will try to do that after the call today.
Two-minute time check. Manu, right now, next week is scheduled, is our Thanksgiving holiday for most of us in the U.S. We had decided previously in last week's call not to meet next week, so our next scheduled meeting is in 2 weeks from now. Manu, will you let this group know when you have that work completed? And 2 weeks from now, Dan Burnett is up to chair, and I think he will use existing issues as a source for the agenda in our next meeting.
Will do.
Any more orders of business for the day? Then I think we adjourn. Sounds like we're done.
Great. Thanks, all.
Thanks, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving.